ければ。
The button has been pushed.
Commencing podcast now. Sally forth.
Welcome to Pop Tech Jam, the independent audio magazine about consumer technology, pop culture, and the super high importance of data security. I'm J.D. Beersdorfer.
And I'm Pedro Rafael Rosado.
On this week's show, Laura Holson is here and feeling creative, and El Kaiser and I wade into the week's headlines.
Yes, indeed. We dive right in.
Yes, we do. But first, some news.
News.
Or actually,
that
finally,
is
like, some, yeah, finally news. Some news. Yes, finally, some news.
Here's your news.
First up.
What do we got?
Well, you know, there was that whole Ashley Madison thing that happened last week after we recorded the show.
Yep.
The hackers did
their
thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll back it up just in case the two people out there who weren't aware because they were on a long vacation off the grid what happened.
It is August.
The whole Ashley Madison meltdown really blew up last week. To recap the situation, last month, hackers calling themselves the Impact Team grabbed the database and a big chunk of email from Ashley Madison, a Canadian-based dating website devoted to helping married people find and have affairs.
And dating has implied air quotes.
Yes, air quotes dating. The hackers were upset that the site was supposedly not fully erasing customer information, because I guess you could be a customer there, and if you quit, you could pay $19 or whatever and have all of your details scrubbed from the site so no one would ever know you were there.
So they were scamming you, allegedly. Of those
and the hackers were thinking that perhaps the data scrub was not particularly thorough, and so they got me. This is the motive that they said. That despite the fact that this company was selling the service, Avid Life Media was parent company of Ashley Madison, they got very angry because, like, no, you still have stuff there, and to prove it, we're going to take your database, and unless you shut down or stop selling the service, we're going to release all of this information to the public. And so that was the setup. 3 weeks later or so, Avid Life Media, I guess, did not capitulate, and so the hackers dumped more than 30 million account details out onto the internet and also a chunk of the CEO's email out there for public viewing if you knew where to look.
Wow.
As one might expect from a database of people looking to cheat on their spouses and have supplied addresses and credit card information to do so, a panic ensued. In addition to private citizens and politicians, government and military personnel were listed in the database, along with a few big-name evangelical personalities, including reality TV star Josh Duggar, who's been having kind of a year in the spotlight
anyway.
For other proclivities, not quite in line with his public persona.
Right.
At last count, there are 5 lawsuits seeking more than $500 million, with a B, dollars, filed against the site and its parent company, seeking class action status on the alleged breach of contract, negligence, and violation of several state and national privacy laws.
Wowzers.
Yes. One of those suits claims Avid Life Media knew it had weak security because some of the internal company files that the hackers posted were employees warning the hires up of technical problems that could lead to a data breach.
Wait, hold on. The hackers got warnings from internal emails about lax security.
Well, yeah, I'm not quite sure of the timeline, but I guess when they went in and grabbed the CEO's email and a bunch of other company documents, while they were in there, they saw notes that the IT staff had written saying, hey, look, we need to upgrade, or we need to basically make our security better.
Wow.
And whatever. And so I think that – I don't know if the hackers knew this ahead of time, but they posted that information, and then all the lawyers saw that there had been prior acknowledgement of perhaps big, giant, gaping security holes.
Yep.
And so they're saying that the company knew it had problems and therefore is negligent in its duty to protect people's accounts.
They must have been hit by people just abandoning the site left and right.
Yeah. Well, I think it just kind of collapsed like the Hindenburg when the breach was made.
Yeah.
And all the news stations picked this up, and they had pictures of the database. People were called up, and you could see
information
right there. Yes.
Wow.
So it was if you were a member of the site, I'm sure you were probably a little nervous there.
Just a little bit. Flop sweat. A little sweaty.
Well, and I think there were 2 unconfirmed reports of people committing suicide because they had been listed in the database. I don't know if those have been verified. And there's a $500,000 reward now that's been offered for information leading to the arrests of the hackers. I think you and I were saying that whoever did this was either a very disgruntled customer.
Yep.
Could possibly be an inside job. You never know. Somebody who knew that the security of the site was not particularly up to snuff.
Yep.
And as noted security blogger Brian Krebs found, other files posted online indicated that the top dogs from Avid Life Media may have been hacking a competing website to get customer information themselves, like the CTO was ripping off another customer database.
Wow. So this just gets uglier and uglier.
There are so many layers to this story.
Wow.
And then the Columbia Journalism Review reports that some news outlets are refusing to report the names of people caught in the breach for ethical reasons. Like, look, this is a privacy matter. Just because it's public doesn't mean it has to be published.
Right.
And there's some news stories saying, no, we're not going to list the names, but we'll just say that this happened. So, and that had some very interesting arguments there.
Sure.
And I think what somebody said, well, what's the story here? Not that all these people got busted, but the fact that hackers time and time again are getting these big public databases, you know, the Blue Cross Blue Shield thing, the Anthem,
right.
The JP Morgan, this, it's happening all over the place.
And
these hackers have a lot of power. So
that's right.
What's up with that?
The idea is your data is not secure, period. Anywhere.
Yes.
I'm not even exaggerating. It's gotten to the point where you cannot, with any assurance, put any personal information on the internet and expect it to be secure. You just can't.
Yeah. Identity.
Nothing.
Bank account information.
Absolutely nothing. It's a free-for-all. Anyone can get your information. That's how anyone should start off anytime they're asked to put personal information on the internet. That's what you should say to yourself. Oh, it's asking me for my home address. Everyone in the world can have access to this.
Yeah, and I think that's the question that we're just going to have to,
right.
You know, how much do I want to order from this site? Do I want my stuff to be out there? Even the federal government, you know, all of those IRS
Absolutely.
And government employees got hacked. So
no system is safe, folks. None.
Yes.
That's it. And people thought I was like really being paranoid.
No,
I've been saying it forever.
You were looking down the
line. I was indeed.
Yes. Now, in possibly related news, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit has ruled that the Federal Trade Commission has the authority to sue companies that fail to enforce data security policies and lose customer personal information to hackers.
Wow.
The ruling stems from the original case filed by the FTC back in 2012 against hotel conglomerate Wyndham Worldwide for 3 data breaches in 2 years and about $10 million in fraudulent charges, all due to security failures.
Wow.
The hotel chain, however, vows to fight on in a lower court, saying that the ruling this week was just about the FTC's authority, you know, respect its authority,
that's right.
And not the specific allegations the agency made against Wyndham for their lousy security. The agency is not gaining any new powers as it is, but the ruling shuts down any legal questions around its ability to enforce security standards. And if Wyndham loses its other fights, it could still end up with its IT department kind of riding sidecar with the FTC for many years to make sure that they are up to code. They may not get fined, but you're going to have the FTC checking in on you all the time to make sure you are being secure.
Well, they're going to have to do that to a lot of other companies.
Yeah. And I think because this ruling passed and said, yes, the FTC does have this authority.
Right.
I think a lot of companies that, you know, before they were like, oh, well, sorry, it got hacked. Sorry, all your data got away, you know.
Oopsie.
Are bad. They're going to have to start paying fines and being held accountable for this. Yep. And I think that's the important thing here.
That is exactly the important thing.
Yes. So moving on, happier news.
Happy news. All right. Good.
Yes. Microsoft may not be dominating smartphone sales, but the company is finding new uses for the little handheld devices. A Microsoft research project called Mobile Fusion lets people use their phones to scan objects and create high-quality 3D images without a lot of extra effort. It's just like you're taking a regular video.
Okay. My first thought was paperweight, but that's totally different.
Yeah, yeah. No, and this is, you know,
this is cool.
Other phones. Yeah, yeah. This is a Mobile Fusion.
Right.
These images can later be used for things like augmented reality video games or 3D printing.
Very cool.
I like 3D printing.
We do.
Mobile Fusion works directly on the phone itself and requires no internet connection, which could lead to some really cool vacation photos, too.
Yes, indeed.
Empire State Building in 3D.
Incense around. I want an incense around.
Yes, and we write a little soundtrack.
Yeah, there you go.
The research team on the project will formally present Mobile Fusion in early October at the International Symposium on Mixed and Augmented Reality.
There's a symposium for that?
I want some swag from that show,
yes,
man.
Indeed.
Forgot Comic-Con.
That's right.
A rockin' show.
That's right.
Microsoft also had a few other items of note this week.
Really?
For one, it released a public beta of its Cortana assistant for Android. Anyone who is interested in having Cortana on their Android device, you can jump in there with a beta. I hear it's not exactly the smoothest install.
Oh, yeah.
But it's out there.
Yeah.
And in celebration of its 20th anniversary of Windows 95 this past Monday, Microsoft gave away free downloads of the classic Rolling Stones track Start Me Up in the Windows Store for anyone who was paying attention or feeling nostalgic for old advertising campaigns.
I remember that. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I went back and watched the commercials because I wasn't really paying attention to them when they were on. And it's just to see Windows 95 being presented as a new product.
I thought they were going to start giving away like disks of Windows 95.
Yeah, so here's some lovely floppy disks for you.
Here. 66 floppy disks for
you. Yeah, apparently for 24 hours, if you happen to be in the Windows Store or knew this promotion was going on, you could download the Start Me Up track.
Gee, I missed it.
Yeah, hey, we weren't you know, watching the wires.
Yes, we were.
Comcast has big plans for the next couple of years.
Does it?
Yes, the company told the Fierce Cable site that it plans to upgrade its entire cable network with DOCSIS 3.1 technology, which could support maximum data speeds of 10 gigabits per second.
Nice.
Maximum theoretical here.
Yes.
Comcast plans to have compatible modems out to customers in early 2016 and will start by offering the 1 gigabit per second service to customers and then, you know, tweak the network and go on from there. But they've kind of got their roadmap for how we're going to keep getting faster and make people happy with our speedy service.
Well, they're feeling the burn from fiber.
Yeah, so they're upgrading there. Mozilla is having a tussle with diversity issues in the workplace this month, and the company CEO Chris Board has threatened to fire an anonymous Reddit poster if the person is found to be a Mozilla employee.
Do tell.
The Reddit user in question had posted complaints about social justice warriors and feminists and being glad when they left the company. There was a whole thing where a prominent Mozilla employee had been tweeting about how undiverse the company was, and she was unhappy and she ended up leaving, and this person was very glad to see this woman go and had said made remarks to that effect on Reddit. The company CEO Beard responded to those remarks on Reddit by saying, quote, "When I talk about crossing the line from criticism to hate speech, I'm talking about when you start saying, quote, someone's kind doesn't belong here and we'll all be happy when they're gone," end quote. And he also continued, "So if and when we identify this person, and if they are an employee, they will be fired," end quote.
Boom.
So not happy there.
I'm kind of shocked that that would happen on Reddit because it's such a common,
it's very,
you know, pleasant little
I know
place.
They totally play by Marquess of Queensberry rules and it's very dignified.
Yeah, it's very dignified.
In other company news, Mozilla announced a shift for the Firefox browser and has plans to move away from those add-ons that they always touted to sort of extend the browser's powers. Those add-on softwares are created by third-party developers are going to move to the extensions model used by Chrome. And I think what this means for developers is if you're developing a Chrome extension, you don't have to go too far to also make it compatible for Firefox.
Nice. Very
it
nice.
Could make it easier for the developers. Now, watching politicians attempt to use Twitter is a thrilling spectator sport for many, but the bird-themed microblogging service is making it harder for some viewers to enjoy the schadenfreude when tweets are hastily deleted and then resurrected.
Yeah.
Twitter informed Open State Foundation, the Netherlands-based political watchdog group, that it was suspending access to the company's API for both the DiploTwoops and the PolitiTwoops apps. I don't know if you've ever used these.
No, I didn't.
I'm probably pronouncing them wrong. PolitTwoops, I think. Yeah. What these apps did was they displayed the deleted tweets of lawmakers and diplomats for journalists and anybody interested in transparency to see. If someone posted something, they quickly deleted it. It had kept this record. So the apps were very popular, as you can imagine, in some quarters. And I think they borked the U.S. version of PolitTwoops in May because, I don't know, whatever. You know, politicians probably complained that they were being embarrassed by it. But other companies had still been able to use it. Now that Twitter's saying, no, we're cutting off your APIs altogether. Right. If these people are – I think Twitter's thing was people should be allowed to make mistakes. And if someone tweets something in haste and didn't really think it out, they should have the right to delete it and – move on just like normal people. And,
and so
there's a point there too.
There is. There's a point.
People who watch governments to see what they're doing would also notice people would tweet things and then all of a sudden it would change. And so on a political playing field, it maybe had a little more weight.
Of course it did.
So so that's that. So I guess they'll have to find other ways to see deleted tweets.
I'm sure there are other ways out there.
Yeah, people are probably working on it now. Google has reopened its community editing Mapmaker tool to 45 more countries. Remember, it shut down Mapmaker in May after a bout of user-generated vandalism was uncovered.
I'm sorry. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Some of it was humorous. 2 weeks ago, Mapmaker reappeared for 6 countries, including Bangladesh, Brazil, Canada, India, the Philippines, and Ukraine. Google has now added 45. I believe the U.S. is back on the playing field. But Google has changed the way MapMaker works and includes regional leads now, which are basically people who will moderate edits in maps to make sure that minions aren't going through and putting in places that don't exist.
Or, oh, like Reddit.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Or you know, naughty things with the Android logo thing going on. So they're going to be the regional leads, you know, kind of the hall monitors of the MapMaker world. And then they've also taken out polygon editing, and Google is very upfront now that if you mess around and violate MapMaker's terms of use, you will not be able to use the product.
There you go.
Yes, so you will lose your map-making privileges. As the Android police and other sites are reporting, though, Google is experimenting with adding food photography to maps, or as they call it, foodographs.
That's what they're calling it. Don't ever say that on the web.
Foodographs.
No.
Pictures of your meal.
Thank you.
They're encouraging people to photograph meals and then upload them, and perhaps maybe they show up next to a restaurant listing or something on Google Maps.
Sometimes things don't need invented words.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just don't.
Somebody probably really worked hard on that too.
Yeah, all right. I feel bad now.
Yeah, so but still. They're thinking that this was a reborn feature. That Google had this thing called Tablescape earlier in the year.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
it was part
right.
of in inspiring Google Plus users to share their food porn. And then that went away, and now it's not universal, but some people using Google Maps are reporting that they're seeing this tool to upload your food pictures.
Okay, so I take a picture of my food. I'm in a restaurant. I take a picture of my food, and it shows up on the Map app?
Yeah, if you take a picture of your delicious meal and you upload it to the right place, in theory, I'm thinking that somebody else searching for this restaurant or stuff to do in the neighborhood sees the restaurant listing on Google through Maps or Google Now. And goes to look and sees pictures of the thing, and then they see the picture of your steak or whatever, and say, "Oh, delicious steak there!" Yeah,
there you go.
They can see your PB&J there.
There you go,
and know that is a fine place to eat
my cereal.
Yes,
my Frosted Flakes.
I think that's how it's supposed to work. So,
all right, yeah, I come on. Oh well, they got hall monitors now, so
yeah. So you probably can't get away with too much with the food pictures either.
Yeah.
Now, this week in drone news, Sony is working with the Japanese robotics company ZMP and is experimenting with an unmanned aerial vehicle that looks like a tiny airplane, but can take off and land vertically. It can also carry 22 pounds and fly at a speed of up to 106 miles an hour. Commercial drone. The two companies have formed a new company called AeroSense for these commercial drone adventures and have another model that looks like the traditional quadcopter. So Sony is dabbling here in the drone world too. Drones are kind of here to stay. The little airplane looked cute though. It looked kind of like a little tiny Concorde.
Yeah, well, you fill it with 22 pounds of weaponry and then
you got a death machine.
106
miles an hour. Yeah.
Nice.
But, just to keep, we're keeping our eye on the drones.
Yes, we are.
You've got to know what's out there.
That's right.
And finally. Speaking of Japanese aircraft.
Yes.
The International Space Station received an unmanned supply module from Japan with 4.5 tons of supplies, as well as a batch of Suntory whiskey products, which could include Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, or Canadian Club, as Suntory owns all of those.
Right.
Now, before you have visions of the astronauts playing quarters in zero gravity or taking some really loopy spacewalks, the booze is actually there for scientific reasons.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Scientific reasons.
Just like the space lettuce.
Scientific reasons.
Yes. The 5 whiskey samples will be studied to see if aging in microgravity has any effect on the mellowing of the liquor's flavor. The microgravity study includes 2 groups of samples that will be stored on the space station, one for 13 months and one for more than 2 years. And then there'll also be a control group stored down on Earth because, you know, with experiment, you have to have a control group.
Mm-hmm.
The whiskey samples will then come back to Earth from the space station and will be studied to check for chemical differences. All the whiskey groups in the test will be identical, but the only variable here is gravity.
Gravity.
So we'll see if the space whiskey is perhaps tastes better or age more mellow. You're going to say it, aren't you?
Space whiskey. That's just too good.
Space bourbon.
Space bourbon. So hold on a second. When does the case of Bud get sent up there?
I don't know when they're sending the Bud. I figure they want to get the good stuff up there first.
Schlitz. They're going to send them a crate of Schlitz.
Yeah. And then you see how your beer Kool-Aid does up there. You know, plus the whole thing with carbonation is that, you know, that like the cans blow up in space.
See, that would be more interesting to me.
I think that's got
to
be the next study. Well, but they're doing the whiskey one first because whiskey people – and Suntory donated this whiskey for this experiment.
Did they pay for the whole trip?
I don't know if they funded the 4.5 tons of cargo supplies or if they just had a little sort of stowaway on there.
This space trip presented to you by Suntory.
Yes.
They have to do ads in space.
And every time I think Suntory whiskey, I always think of that Bill Murray movie, The Lost in Translation.
Yes, that's right.
So that's the whiskey experiment.
space bourbon.
I know. It did make me kind of, you know, want to have a nice, quiet little dram somewhere.
Yes.
And maybe we should go do that. But before we should maybe sign out of the news here. So for anyone out there who wants to know more about the space whiskey or the little tiny drone that looks like an airplane or the whole Ashley Madison mess,
right, exactly.
Our recap thereof, you can find it all at
poptechjam.com.
Up next, Laura Holson. As promised, Laura Holson is back in the house with us. Laura, welcome back.
Hey, I should get a little bell or something.
I know we need
here.
A Laura Holson theme music or something.
Yes, we do. We need theme music. I'm going to work on that.
And like a trendy segment name or something.
Laura. Yes. No, we should have a Laura from the movie.
I know. There are so many things. Mr. Audio Engineer, perhaps we can
I'm working on it.
But I hear you're feeling creative this week.
I'm feeling mighty creative.
Can you tell us more?
Yes, I can. In a couple of weeks, a story is going to appear in my newspaper, The New York Times, that I've written, I know, about creativity.
Okay.
And as you guys know, and most people know around the building, I went away for a year.
We wondered where you were.
To a good place.
Yikes.
Which is the University of Michigan and in Ann Arbor. And I studied digital storytelling and filmmaking and creativity. I took voice acting lessons.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like you needed it.
Learned to project at those Wolverine football games.
It's really, oh my gosh. That's for a chapter of a book.
Okay. Yes.
My first college football game was a Wolverines game.
So, nobody plays football like the Big Ten, except for the SEC, which is actually better at it. But anyway, I digress.
Yes. Well, I'm not a football fan, so I'm not offended.
I have no idea what you were talking about. So.
I went to UC Santa Barbara. I'm like a killer with a frisbee.
Fighting frisbees.
Frisbees.
So back to creativity.
Yes, creativity. Yes.
Back to creativity. And one of the things I noticed among a lot of people I know is that they were talking more about things that they were doing, like painting and drawing and, you know, going to classes. And I thought, what's going on here? And what we're finding is we're having kind of a creativity boom.
Really?
Yeah. I kind of see it as the next iteration of mindfulness and meditation because people can draw and they can kind of relax. And, you know, with the economy being what it had been, a lot of people didn't change jobs. And so they were looking for a way to be more fulfilled.
Right.
And a way to do that was by exploring their more inner life than kind of the outer life at the office.
Mm-hmm.
But how? I mean, by going out and buying easels and painting murals or what?
Exactly. It's – okay, so I got an Instagram account like last year, and I, you know, it seems very simple, but I explore color and composition with my Instagram account.
So with your photography.
You follow me,
yes,
right?
I do. Yes.
So you look at it, it's photography, but a lot of it is like I posted a photograph of a rug because I really liked the pattern and I thought, oh, this reminds me of, you know, whatever. It's a visual diary,
sure.
But at the same time, I'm doing still lives. A friend of mine got a Buddha board, which I always want to call the Buddha bar, but
that's
in Paris.
And probably achieves a different end, I'm thinking.
Yeah,
well, for her, it's about, you know, she'll get up every day and she paints something on her board. And what it is, it's a photosensitive board or a board that's sensitive to a pen, and she draws something and then it fades.
Mm.
Yeah, you have to think of it like Snapchat for illustrators.
Yes.
And so she does this every day, and she really, really loves it. Another friend of mine took painting classes, and she started to swim, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, so physical and mental.
Yeah, physical and mental. And it's this idea that, you know, as we become more stressed out, if we're going to relax, it's going to be in a creative way. So that got me thinking about what kind of other things can you do with the phone? Or with music. And what, you're a big fan of music, aren't you?
I am. Andrew? I did it for a living for a long
time. You have a few tracks,
right? Yeah. I do. I have a few tracks.
Really? Can we hear them?
No. They're buried. They're buried. Embarrassing tracks from the early 80s. But no, I mean, as far as the music is, well, I used to, back in the day, I used synthesizers and all these gigantic computers and all this craziness. But now what I do is, and I actually occasionally will compose music for interstitials here on the show with GarageBand or a whole like ridiculous amount of music apps on my iPad. I find using the iPad is my main music creation device now.
Right.
And just like you said, I find it very fulfilling. It is a hell of a lot of fun.
Yes.
And, you know, it's also a social thing. You know, I can, you know, I do a track, I share it with my kids. They make some music. It's like a little family thing. I have painting apps that I play around with online. So the technology is what's really driving my creative juices lately.
Well, because you can, it's, you know, it's so, and it's so cheap.
It is cheap
and portable.
They're free.
Yeah, absolutely. Very portable.
And also with what I think is kind of why this is happening now with, again, this rise of this creative class is that we're no longer tied to the television. So at 8 o'clock at night, you know, when you come home from work or whatever, you don't have to sit down and watch whatever TV program because you can watch it whenever you want.
Right.
So you can go to an art class or you can spend some time on your Mac playing with GarageBand from like 8 to 10 and then watch what you want later. And so there's this wonderful convergence of kind of time being freed up because everything is now, you know, when you want it, and then all these different, you know, apps and things.
Parallel rises here.
Yes. So my thing is video, and I'm really trying to get more into video. I mean, because I start with photographs and I love it, and I do all these crazy layouts. So it will look like I took a photograph of one thing, but it's really three different photographs put together.
Right.
But to make it look seamless, I mean, like I have a lot of fun with it. And I also do like, and this is going to sound so old school, but I text my family. I have a lot of brothers and sisters. And what I'll do is I'll text a photo and I'll say, hey, what do you think? And then we have these long dialogues and they're sending pictures. I mean, I did this with my sisters recently. Related to, I can't believe I'm admitting this on, you know, admitting this period. I bought everybody some socks that had little cats on them.
Okay.
And so I said, send me pictures of your cats, thinking they would send pictures of the socks.
Uh-huh.
And it ended up being 50 photographs of their animals.
Whoa, so you got a whole lolcats right in the family.
Well, there and I go. Didn't know that I had like a family of cat ladies.
Yeah.
You know?
All your cat nieces and nephews here.
Yeah, exactly. So the Buddha board was one thing I thought was interesting, but there's some interesting apps like Dubsmash. And
Dubsmash.
Yeah, do you know it? Do you use it?
Is that the one that the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Agent Carter people were using backstage at Comic-Con? Yeah, I love that. It's
right.
I mean, celebrities having fun with it.
Rihanna released an album or a song on there or something.
Yeah, but for those who don't know of the Dubsmash.
Well, no, it's how you can lip sync to short audio clips from like famous songs. And who doesn't want to be Rihanna?
Yeah,
who doesn't want to be somebody else? Like, didn't we all kind of dance around the living room as kids?
Yeah, the Tiger Beat years, yeah.
Yeah, not that I ever did that.
No, never. Did. You've read about it.
I still do that. What are you kidding me?
Okay, I admit it.
Yeah, see?
Sound of Music.
Yeah, you go.
So it's really fun. Like, you're right. And even like celebrities can kind of express their personality. Another one that just totally made me laugh too was, it's called Front Back.
Have you heard about it? No, I've never heard of it.
So Front Back is, it's an app where you can take, when you take a photograph, you take a picture of what you see in front of you, but then it also takes a picture of you and then it kind of combines them. And
that's pretty slick. I like that.
Cool. Well, did you ever see the movie The Other Guys?
No, I have not.
Have you seen the movie?
No, I have not seen
it. Oh, God, it's so good. You have to see it. One of the characters there created an app called Face Back, where you could take the picture of the back of someone's head.
And like, so you think maybe these app developers were inspired?
Yeah, I think they might have been
totally
inspired.
I totally do. I think, or maybe the movie was inspired. Life imitating art, art imitating life. And there's a lot of art things you can do. There's an app called Paper by 53, and it's a digital version of an artist's sketchbook.
I have that. I love that.
Do you?
Yes. I use it a lot. My daughter uses it too.
Wait, you should be writing about creativity.
I just like being online and using my iPad, basically.
We have to get you outside in a gallery.
Yeah, no. The sun, that orb in the sky. No.
Yeah. It gets hot out there.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then I was, you know, just kind of noodling around and I found this. This made me laugh out loud because we all know how big Frozen is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does anybody here have kids who are into Frozen?
Yes.
I think someone may have a couple over there.
Well, I've got something for you.
All right. As long as it has nothing to do with that song.
It kind of has everything to do with the movie.
Okay, the movie. That's fair.
So there's a thing called Disney Frozen Story Theater. And what you're able to do, or kids are able to do, is they can make these puppet shows where children, they pick scenes and characters and they make up their own stories. And I thought, you know, Frozen is such a big hit. I wonder if men like it. And are we going to see in 6 months, we're going to see, you know, like there were bronies. Yeah. Are we going to have brosens?
I would not be surprised.
I mean, wouldn't that be fantastic?
There's some crossover with the Idina Menzel
brosens.
Fan base,
I love that. Brosens. Well, hey, I'm a brony. I will admit to being a brony.
Really?
I watch it every night. Every night when I'm working out, I'm on my bike, mm-hmm. I watch 2 episodes of My Little Pony. I'm not sure I'm going to be a Frozen, though.
Yeah. I can tell your first thought, you were hoping that the Frozen app she was talking about was a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
It's more of a creative.
Where Olaf gets a big, RPG yeah. and starts going nuts. No.
So, yeah. I don't know. I'm watching out for you, Pedro.
Yes, you are. I appreciate it. I need all the help I can get.
Yeah, well, we should link to these apps that you've mentioned here. And one quick question before we let you work out, like, oh, for the week. Do you find when you're doing your own creative projects, does this unlock anything in your subconscious? Do you find the relaxation time you get while you're doing these creative things help you in other parts of your life? Or maybe you've had time to sub-process something while you're painting or making a nice photograph, and then it actually helps you in work or something?
That's a fantastic question, because yes, it does help me in work. That one of the reasons I did Instagram, and like now this year I'm forcing myself to take a photo a day. And what I find is that I'm in the practice now of looking. And as a writer, I'm always looking anyway, and I you know, have a pretty good eye and can see. Now I have to see it at a completely different level. Like I'm looking at, again, color, composition, movement. I've never been intrigued by dogs, but
now they're fascinating.
I'm like,
right?
Kind of into dogs, and I didn't.
They're colorful.
Yeah, no, they're funny, and it's kind of, you know, funny. I sent a lot of pictures of dogs, and I thought, what is that? I mean, you know, not a dog lady, but it's something I would have never. Dogs weren't really in my consciousness, you know, other than I tripped over them on the street.
Yeah,
and which I have a funny story about Ron Wood with dogs and tripping on the street, which I'll save for another.
You'll
day.
Save for yes, another. Day. I want to answer that one too, because my day job turns into more of an administrative job, mm-hmm. which I was
pushing
not
that pixel to...
seriously not designed, literally not designed to do. And having the outlet of doing the GarageBand and Paper 53 and some other painting apps and stuff that I had at home really made the day gig, the non-creative work, a heck of a lot more acceptable.
Yes, you know, like you could tolerate
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I'm using that other part of my brain, and it helped immensely.
It's a holistic approach. I mean, I kind of see it as a new work-life balance, where, again, there's this holistic approach to not saying, this is my work, this is my life, saying it's a big pie. And sometimes you get a little juice into one other corner, but it all kind of ends up, I think, bleeding together. And I know a lot of people who have kind of taken this more creative path, and they've started new jobs or are doing things that they would have never, ever imagined, and happily so. And they're happier at the office.
So. Wow. All right. So here's to creativity.
Yay.
Laura, thanks for dropping by. And again, we will link to these apps that you have mentioned. So if anyone wants to see what you speak of there, they can go and maybe try it out for themselves and get some of that creative love. So this is fabulous. We wish we could have her every week, don't you?
Yes. I wish we could.
I know you're very busy, so we'll take the every other. But
She's busy taking photos and posting them on Instagram.
Yeah, busy being creative.
Yeah, yeah.
Although this is creative too.
Yeah, that's true.
This is where I can use my voice acting classes.
Nice. Yes, yes. Excellent. Well, I'm glad we can help. So thanks again. And maybe you'll come back a week after next.
Cross my heart.
Because we'll be in September by then. Like the fall will officially be here.
There you go.
Oh, I might be on vacation that week.
Oh, okay.
But we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, a calendar overlays everybody. Lay it down.
I'll have a report from the U.S. Open.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah. Very nice.
We'll wait for that. All right. Well, I guess we should also say goodbye.
Yeah,
general,
we got to go.
Because, right? You know, it's that time of show.
It is that time of show. We should thank the bros.
Thank you, bros.
Yes. Thank you, bros. BuiltByBros.com. Build something with the bros.
Yes, they are enablers of creativity.
They really are. Say. They really are. No joke. No joke.
Yes. And thank you to the listeners out there, each and every one of you. We love you.
Yes, we do.
And we love Laura Holson, too.
Yes, we do.
And I guess we'll be back next week. You and I will be back, and we'll see Laura when she gets done with her adventures.
Right, and it'll be the fall of love, no longer the summer of love.
Yes,
it'll
summer of love, and maybe we'll edge into sweater weather and away from,
weather.
You know
I
humidity.
Love sweater weather.
That's oh, we could talk about online shopping.
Yeah. Well, okay, yeah, you two can have a whole shoe show.
Oh my gosh, I just bought 3 pairs of
I had to leave my credit card upstairs. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it upstairs.
All right, I sense a spinoff coming.
I have a new fall wardrobe.
All right.
She's killing me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be all kinds of creativity going on here. All right. So we'll be back next week. Again, I'm J.D. Beersdorfer.
And I'm Pedro Rafael Rosado.
Shopping, huh?
Shopping.